Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're headed into Holy Weeks, right? We've got Easter coming up. We've got Passover coming up.
It's a big time of the year.
It is a big time of the year for and family entertaining.
You have so many great memories, you know, from childhood through adulthood.
Maybe you do. No,
oh,
I'm just...
Jeez. I do.
I had a dream about my mother last night, so
oh,
please.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Okay.
And it didn't have to do with the Easter holidays. She was trying to sell something.
Oh, golly. So. Well, So, I mean, I know for me, of course, Easter was always, you know, when you're a kid, you can't wait to see that Easter basket, and the food probably wasn't terribly important.
11 chocolates. Right? Did you always get a chocolate bunny from...
Oh, yeah.
From someone?
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah, and then the next thing was...
Could you eat it in one shot?
No. Actually, I don't ever really remember
eating... Oh,
yeah. The chocolate bunny, wasn't my thing.
I think
as
I got
kid.
Chocolate up my nose. I know it was definitely in my hair at times.
Oh,
my 3.5-year-old, I cannot wait to see. And she's, you know, she's fastidious after she has made a giant mess.
Oh, so. There we go.
There will be chocolate
everywhere.
It's good
to be a
child. I expected to be on her father.
Right. Well, I think Malta milk balls were one of my absolute favorite things. Oh, my God. I love those things. Whoppers.
For Easter?
Whoppers. Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh.
That's
I think my mom liked those. Yeah, it comes down to the fact that the lady that puts, or gentleman who puts the basket together may be the motivating factor as to what is in that basket. And yeah, my mom loves Malta milk balls.
I think just the concept of some kind of a basket in the spring that you give someone, whether it's a child or a friend or, you know, like it could have flowers in it or even like Mother's Day. There's a person that I always give asparagus and a bottle of rosé and nice mushrooms, you know, just
that's nice.
Some flowers. Just to, you know, I think that is kind of a fun thing, although nothing's quite as much fun as, to me, as trying to see if you could eat the entire chocolate rabbit.
Gigantic chocolate bunnies. Yeah. Well, and coloring the eggs. I mean, until the very last year of my father's life, we were, you know, he was doing colored eggs. We were doing colored eggs if we were together. My dad was always great about that. I mean, he was carving pumpkins and doing all those things that we always did. He always did that stuff. It was always so much fun to have that time with him. I'll never forget having that time with him because, you know, he worked a lot.
Do you have chef's secret egg coloring techniques?
No, I color eggs just like I did when I was a kid. And I think
so
people can be somewhat disappointed by that.
Use little metal dippers to do like half
you know
pink
it.
And half blue.
Oh, yeah. I don't do anything. When it comes to that old stuff that we did when we were kids.
And all that
No. Even my pumpkins have triangle eyes and, you know, triangle nose and a scary mouth. I never do the really fancy ones because
nice work,
I like
Brown.
Doing it the way it used to be done. Yes. I like those memories.
Now,
so people are building memories. So let's help them make some good food memories.
Well, the food part of it is the whole ball game, right? Once you get past the fact that you have no appetite because you ate the entire chocolate bunny.
See, my mom wouldn't have let that happen. So there would have been an appetite because that would never have happened. My mother also monitored Halloween candy. I think most mothers do. But, I mean, you know, you were allowed like a couple of pieces a day, even though you had like a barrel full.
I mean, the getting together with people, I mean, it's always, you want to celebrate, and depending upon your faith tradition, for a lot of folks, you're coming to the end of Lent, and so it's usually some kind of a rich meal.
Right, because I guess a lot of people give up maybe some sort of sugar or something like that.
Did your family do brunch or dinner or afternoon dinner,
It was always dinner after church, so... in my family, we always had, every Sunday, we always had a big dinner after church and then a light supper that evening. So for Easter, it was just based around the food, which, of course, the obvious thing is lamb because spring lamb was always very, very popular.
So on that you would eat like a normal breakfast and then...
Yeah, we typically had, you know, I recall it being very rushed to get you know, not we were rushed, but I remember breakfast was very on the quick.
Because you had to get before church. You had to get done up for church.
Yeah,
right?
And we typically also went to Sunday school too, so it was, you know, a lot of stuff happening before. And my parents were involved
Easter
in
Easter bonnets.
Oh, that was my favorite part of church. I was so hyperactive when I was a child. I know that's hard to believe. It was really hard for me to sit still in church. And of course, my mother made us sit still in church, and we weren't allowed to move, and we weren't allowed to talk, and we always wore our best clothing, and you were super uncomfortable. And I also recall the church never had any air conditioning. So on top of that, I was always hot, which I hate to be hot, which is kind of funny since I'm a chef.
But since you work in the kitchen.
I don't notice it when I'm in a kitchen. I notice it every other time. It's funny. I just take it in stride when I'm in the kitchen. But the church, yeah, the hats in the church. Oh, my gosh. That was the most, that was what I did. I looked at the ladies' hats That entertained me.
Having been in the business forever, I mean, looking out even years and years ago at the Governor's Club, you look out at brunch time and you see the ladies starting to come in after earlier church for brunch, and it was just a parade of hats.
Mm-hmm. And gloves and handbags and shoes and fun dresses. Well, that was the other thing. We always got a special,
It's a little easier when Easter, when Easter is late. It's a little bit easier.
Yeah.
When Easter's in the middle of March and you just had a snowstorm 2 days ago.
Yeah, depending
on where
you live.
It's a little tougher to put on a peach-colored hat and, you know, some kind of a light shift and head out.
It's a good memory, the Easter holidays. You know, hunting for eggs in the yard and just so many other things.
My dad loves to tell, he loves to repeat stories, and Lord knows. And I love my dad. My dad was cruel to us at Easter.
What?
When I was really little. He colored one egg.
Oh. Oh.
And then he kept moving the egg when I would find it. I kept bringing it to him. And he would say, "That's great. Go find another one." And he'd go hide the same egg again and again.
That's awesome. I mean, that's funny.
Efficient to his core.
Yes,
but
indeed.
That's, you know, I'm 50-some-odd years old. I'm kind of like, "Hey, Pop." Uh-huh. That's a little rotten.
Well, and then you only had one egg to eat if you like boiled eggs. I mean,
that was also
part of the Easter egg hunt part.
You also don't want to eat the two things you didn't want about the eggs. One is you didn't want to get to Wednesday and you still have seven eggs to eat.
No.
It's really not that cool. You don't want to do too far ahead on coloring the eggs.
Right.
And if you didn't like egg salad sandwiches, you're in deep trouble.
Right.
And two, if they were really hidden around the yard expertly, once my dad got over the hiding one egg repeatedly routine, he would make it much tougher, or my mother would make it tougher, or I was the oldest, and I would hide them from my brothers. Mm-hmm. And I hid them really well. And you know how you find the eggs that they don't find? You find them days later in the sun, aromatically. Right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's not the
Easter.
Best.
What a great holiday.
Yeah, bad eggs.
So what food did you have growing up that
besides the chocolate?
Well, and your grandmother probably made, or your great-grandmother probably made great.
Well, a bunch
Easter.
Of Southerners in the family, so it was less often lamb. It was daytime. It was almost always ham.
Yeah, sure.
It was almost always ham. Mm-hmm. Ham, maybe
a fresh ham, a cured ham, or a country ham?
Not a country ham usually.
Yeah.
If it was my grandmother, it might be country ham and biscuits and, a bunch of other goodies to go along with it. But that was kind of the, like you would eat 10 little biscuit sandwiches.
I guess I should have said baked ham, which is probably what you had. You had a baked ham.
Baked ham and fresh ham.
Oh, God, I love fresh ham. That's what I would make. That's absolutely what I would make.
Fresh ham rubbed with honey, rock salt, and black pepper.
Oh, boy. Yummy.
You know, and then... roasted in the oven, and that was pretty darn good. And like a little cabbage salad and sweet potatoes that were way too sweet.
Oh, gosh.
That were really good.
I've never heard of serving sweet potatoes.
That had lots of marshmallows on them.
Easter. Okay. Interesting.
I think she just likes sweet potatoes.
Yeah, and Southern, for sure. Yeah, my Aunt Nancy, I know they used to slaughter a hog around Easter time, and then they would have those fresh hams. Oh, my gosh. And they had a really big family, good farm family, and I'm sure lots of relatives came for Easter at their house, and we were certainly part of that. And I just, there's nothing better than a fresh ham or even the pork loin. I remember when they would have we had a family reunion 1 year, and Uncle Jack slaughtered a hog, and we had the pork loins, and that was the best pork loin I've ever had in my life. And they slow grilled them outside and smoked them.
Oh, naturally raised
those
fresh
were the days.
Products is,
gosh, so good.
What you want.
Yeah.
So just for fun, country ham versus
baked ham, fresh ham,
boiled ham,
right?
Canned hams. Oh. Fresh ham's not so easy to come by, right?
No, you're probably going to have to ask your butcher for a fresh ham. I'm sure you can get, well, I mean, you can get one. You're just going to have to, I don't think they have a whole bunch in the cases, or maybe zero in the cases. Just ask your butcher for one. And I mean, you're a week out, so if you go to call the butcher tomorrow, you should be able to get a ham, I would expect, in time for the holiday.
I tell you, the fresh ham dish I always think about is a straw smoked that you can get in Savoie. That's a traditional dish up there in the Morels in the springtime. Mm-hmm. That is one of the best.
And just to be clear, a fresh ham is simply, it's just fresh. It's just nothing's been done to it. It's just a fresh piece of meat. Just like if you bought a pork loin or you bought a pork rack chop or anything, that's just fresh pork.
You have to do something with it. And it could be cure it. It could be smoke it. After curing it.
Yeah, so the next things are, a country ham is a cured ham, which means it has some sort of salt and sugar cure on it, and then it's dry aged for whatever period of time, 12 months, 24 months, 36 months, whatever. And if you really aren't following, then just equate it to what prosciutto is. If you know what prosciutto is, that's a not as salty or dry aged ham as our country hams are. But prosciutto is the same thing. You know, you think of the whole ham. And, of course, I'm sure there are places where you can buy sliced prosciutto. Just like with country ham, you can probably buy, I know you can buy slices of country ham rather than buying the whole thing. Because it's not the easiest thing in the world to slice thin, and that's what you want to do. You want to have really thin slices of country ham.
Usually, texturally, it's one of those things it almost chips off more than it, like you get these very pretty papery pieces of prosciutto a lot of times. Country ham is a saltier product.
Drier, yeah. And with a baked ham, it's cured and smoked and probably has some sort of sugar, you know, whether it's sugar or honey or brown sugar and white sugar, whatever, exterior that's been baked into it. But it's a baked ham is going to be something you can eat. It's pink. It also has chemicals in it to preserve it. So that ham can be eaten cold. Or you can heat it up in the oven and slice it and eat it hot. With country ham, you're not going to do that. You're not going to serve hot country ham, quite frankly. You're going to most likely serve it cold. It's really not the best alternative. The alternative really is the baked ham. And, you know, there are all types of products out there that you can buy now. And then with the fresh ham, I would just, you know, do some sort of wonderful crust on it, you know, kosher salt, black pepper, maybe add clove to it just for fun, just to kind of reminisce the whole baked ham thing. Or you could do juniper berries, or you could do you could do herbs, you could do fresh rosemary and extra virgin olive oil and salt and pepper. Thyme would be nice, oregano. But yeah, that's the thing with the three hams and what I think we just more traditionally think of as a baked ham. Which is easy for people, so that's a good thing to serve for people, especially if you are going to church or have a big family to feed and a lot of people to feed.
I think a lot of people do brunch,
yes.
And it ends up being about usually whatever that protein is in main course. It's funny, it's not like Thanksgiving where there's a million side dishes.
Mm-hmm.
At least it never was for me.
No.
I think people expect, I think a lot of times there to be some kind of an egg dish around. Unless it really is one of those Southern dinners that starts at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I remember that my mother always had leg of lamb. She would always get peas, which unfortunately were probably frozen, as I recall. She would make potatoes.
That is always one of
potatoes.
The funny things at Easter. Like, people would put peas with the lamb, and the peas are
not
7 weeks from being in season.
Right, and I just wonder, is that the way you're sure it's always been that way? I guess so, because how could it possibly? Frozen vegetables at one point were really thought to be, you know, healthy and special, you know, when they first came out. So it probably stems. I mean, my family was born.
It's a lot better than canned asparagus.
Oh gosh, I hate canned asparagus. Yes.
That was
probably pretty popular. Well, and canned peas were probably pretty popular.
Petit pois.
Petit pois.
Yeah, yeah. I was going through cookbooks. My great-grandmother was a pretty gifted cook that grew up in the country.
Right.
But my grandmother grew up in the city and went to like finishing school, and that, you know, mm-hmm. she knew how to be a hostess and how to entertain. It was a very different generation of of cook, meaning she wasn't such the best cook. But she did have an awful lot of cookbooks. And so I went, I was looking for inspiration. I went diving through all of these cookbooks, and there are all of these cookbooks from the 1940s, 50s, 60s that are Good Housekeeping or mm-hmm. Betty Crocker, or, and it's, there's so much that draws on either canned vegetables, canned soups as basis for recipes. And I kept flipping through these books and just,
yeah, it's hard to see.
Being like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, but that's,
oh my goodness, I really loved you, and you, and there were notes, you know, because she was a margin note person.
Oh right, absolutely.
She was writing
she
all
was.
These notes in the margin about, this is great, try for brunch, you know, super yes. cheesy, you know, whatever the dish.
She was awesome.
Whatever its character. Oh my gosh.
She was great.
That was always tough.
Well, that's what you have to decide. I mean, when it comes down to it, are you going to do brunch or are you going to do a serious meal? And you can do either one.
Well, when I was a kid, there was no drinking with, like, you celebrated Easter. It was a daytime thing. It was ladies wore the bonnets. You had baskets. Mm-hmm. You ate your chocolate business. You know, you tried not to have too much of it on your clothes. And you ate the big brunchy kind of thing. And once in a while, there'd be that eggy cheese dish or something that you kind of liked to go along with the rest of it. But it was usually a ham. And there was, I know my grandfather was alive, there was whiskey sours.
Oh.
I think that's the way he coped with the hats. but everybody else was pretty mellow about it, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really see it as a big drinking holiday.
But when I think about eating lamb, I want to remake Easter. When we get into the next segment, I kind of want to remake Easter. Like, what is, you know, what do you, like, it's not 1952. It's not 1971, like it might
have
been
for
us.
Right, when we were kids, right.
It's now. What can we do? What is possible? What is actually available from farms? What's a great source for lamb? What's a, you know, what is the treat or the baked good or the chocolate to find and give out? How do you fill out an Easter basket? I feel like our next segment, you know, we've reminisced a lot of this segment. Our next segment should be, okay, this is how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the third segment, you've got
a scary chef challenge.
No, it's not that
it's
scary.
It's not scary today? All right.
No, it's modest and easy and will be lots of fun because that's the kind of stuff I like to write up for you.
Yes, I know, right.
All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we promised a little bit updated take on that Easter supper, that spring celebration, that you know, excuse to get people over and have a whole bunch of flowers on the table.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you making?
I think there are just a lot of different directions you can go. And I would really like, I love smoked salmon. And I just think it's a great way to start. And I don't know too many people that don't. So there are a couple of different things you could do with smoked salmon as a starter course. You could, you know, lay it out on a beautiful tray and have all the condiments in little bowls and toast points ready to go, and people can make their own little plate of food. And you could include greens with that. And that's what's nice, because maybe somebody doesn't actually like smoked salmon, and they could probably even incorporate those condiments in there. Well, or they could make their own little salad with sort of, you know, I mean, condiments would be boiled egg yolk, boiled egg white, capers, a little bit of red onion, creme fraiche, and, you know, you could even add cucumber. Now, it would be a great salad to have cucumbers and capers, and you could even have a little bit of a creme fraiche dressing out, and a bowl of creme fraiche or sour cream, so that you could just incorporate that into a quick little dressing, which would be fun. And all I would do is add some lime juice to the creme fraiche to loosen it up, and a little bit of salt and pepper, and then that suddenly becomes a little dressing for someone's salad if they didn't want the smoked salmon. But that's easy, and you can have all of that done before you go to church or whatever you're doing. Or if you're maybe taking it to someone else's house, you can have it all laid out, wrapped up, bowled up, ready to go.
The other thing I'm wondering, I'm thinking about smoked salmon to start. That's nice. You usually don't have that much stand around time at that kind of an event, but sometimes it's hard to have a plate. I was thinking about what is in season. What asparagus is the one thing that you're getting?
Mm-hmm.
Would it be nice to have a little canapé? You know, what kind of a mm-hmm. toast would you make, or what kind of a...
Well, it's funny that you said that, because I was also thinking about smoked salmon club sandwiches. So you could go that direction as well and have those done, made up, laid out, and you just grab it and eat it. And, you know, I think you could do...
smoked salmon and white asparagus club.
Little, oh, my God, that would be so good. That would be so much fun.
Do you need to slip a little bit of bacon in there?
No.
Let the smoked salmon be the smoky part.
Smoked salmon is the bacon.
Sorry, I'm male. I'm going to throw bacon in anything.
Jeez. A little bit of butter lettuce, bib lettuce, or even hearts of romaine in there. Again, you know, I would put the boiled egg in there for sure, which is a traditional part of a club sandwich, and have your smoked salmon and have white asparagus. I mean, I think that would be a lot of fun. And then you can also have like tarragon mayonnaise or some sort of, you know, pretty little perfumed mayonnaise on the sandwich. And yeah, and have those out. So
that sounds pretty darn dandy.
Yeah, three directions I was thinking.
Glass of good Riesling or something with that.
Oh, yeah, that would be nice.
Something maybe from Alsace, or a really bone dry one from Austria or something. That would be fun. Or even just a Spätlese, something that's a little sweet with good flavor. And you got great vintage in 15 for a lot of the Germans. I mean, that would be...
Mm. That's great.
That'd be a pretty charming start.
Okay. So
that'd be the little smoked salmon clubs with a glass of good 15 vintage German Riesling to go with your To go with your floppy Easter.
That's fun. That's a good start.
Yeah.
And then the other direction I was thinking, in case you don't want to spend the money on smoked salmon, which is super expensive, although you don't need that much, you could cure your own salmon. And I think this is your opportunity to do so. So you buy it has to be very fresh, a side of salmon, and, you know, maybe 4 to 5 pounds. Well, if it's a small group, you're not going to do it.
But how many, what would you buy?
You need a big group. You need 10, 12, 14 people. I just assume that most people are having a relatively large group. If it's a small group, I have some ideas for that as well. But if it is a good size group, you know, again, 10, 14, 12, 14 people, if you buy a side of salmon, say a 4 to 5 pound side, skin on, and to cure it, it's a for one side of 4 or 5 pounds, I would do 2 cups of sugar, 2 cups of salt, and 1/2 cup of freshly cracked black pepper, and you just mix that together, and you put half of it underneath the fish and half of it on top of the fish, and the tail end of the fish should have less cure than the fatter end of the fish, the head end of the fish.
And so thicker flesh, more cure. Thinner flesh, less cure.
And wrap, put it on a sheet pan I'm going to say a sheet pan, preferably with parchment paper underneath it. You don't want it to come in contact with your pan that you have it in. If it's a glass dish, it's fine. But if it's some sort of metal pan, you don't want it to, there's too much acid there, so you're going to have reaction. So you need a barrier between the sheet pan and the fish product. And what it's going to ooze, so you need something. What's happened is it's going to dry the fish, which means some of the natural water content and fat will come out of the fish in this process. So you need a pan with sides on it, and cover it well with plastic wrap, and just cure it for 24 hours. You can cure it for 24 to 36 hours, but I prefer a 24-hour cure. It's not overcured. It's not too salty. It still has a nice body to the fish. Also, make sure the pin bones are out of the fish. So no scales. You cut the belly side off of the fish as well. I would say about 2 inches of the belly side you want to cut off and make sure there aren't any pin bones in.
Anything fun to add to the cure?
Traditionally it would be dill, but I prefer basil. So before I put the plastic wrap on, I take a whole bunch of basil leaves and stems, the whole thing. I bang it up with the back of my knife, not to cut it, but just bruise it a little bit, because that helps to...
To get some of the oil from
exactly.
the herbs.
And I pack the top of the fish with that. And you want to cover the top of the fish.
And this does not go in the oven.
No. Right. This is curing, which is the process of simply... altering the state of the fish through the curing process, which is the salt and the sugar, and you're just drawing out moisture out
of
the product.
It is hard to use air quotes on the radio, but I'm going to do it. It's being cooked, there are the air quotes, by the acidity, by the salt, mm-hmm. over those 24 hours.
Salt. Yeah, it's...
You know, so it becomes a stable product, and the texture changes because of that cure.
Mm-hmm.
If you cook fish, the texture changes one way. This is another one where a lot of moisture is drawn out. The texture changes because of that. But it's a stable product because of the mm-hmm. strong seasoning, too.
Right, right. Okay. And you want to thinly slice it on a bias. I also want to encourage you to cut the top of the very thin layer of the top of the fish off after you take the cure off.
That'll be too salty.
It is. So what strong. You do when you're done, when the fish is cured, you take it off the sheet pan, you bump off all whatever salt that might be remaining in the basil if you chose to use an herb, throw that away in the trash can, and then you actually have to rinse the fish off and then pat it dry. Don't let it sit in water, but just quickly rinse it under cold water. But you know, do it as fast as possible, and then pat it dry very, very well. And then, you know, when either put it in the refrigerator until you're ready to serve it, or if you're ready to serve, you need a slicing knife, and you do cut that top layer off. I always discard the very end of the tail because it's overcured, and it doesn't have a very nice texture. So it gives you a chance to start your bias slice. And I bet you $1 million you can see that done on the internet. So I strongly suggest checking out a video of
a YouTube of bias slicing.
So you can see what you need to do. But if you've had it, you know how thin it should be. You have a sense of that. So that's what you want to do. You just need a good slicing knife to do it. But that's one category. Let's move forward.
The menu. What's the right. When you sit down at the table? What are we serving?
I would make spoon bread, and this is a traditional Southern dish that I've already made modern through making it something that's less dense, making it more of a custard. And I was thinking, because we are in the land of crab, to add some lump crab meat to it. And
because that depends on a late Easter, basically.
Right, and. And also what's happening with the weather down south. You know, you can get, I'm not saying only Maryland crab, you can find
good blue crab.
Or we're definitely getting crawfish. So if you want to alter that from lump crab to a crawfish spoon bread, I can guarantee you can do that. But that's, you need to find the crawfish from a purveyor, and whether you can buy it already cleaned and the tail meat ready to go would be obviously preferable. Or if you feel like bringing in some crawfish, which might be fun, because if you've already got family at your house, maybe you have a little crawfish boil the night before, Saturday night, and you just reserve a little bit of that meat and pop it in your spoon bread for the next day. So the nice thing about spoon bread.
I would love to get an email from listeners who are planning a crawfish boil, Cindy Wolf.
Are you suggesting that no one would do that? Aw.
I'm sure that if you invite people to your crawfish boil, they will come.
Anyway, so let's just go with crab meat, and it is one quart of cream. This should make a pretty good pan. So let's say a half hotel pan. I don't know how that translates. I would say a small casserole dish. So let's say it's enough for 10 people.
Half a hotel pan, usually I think it probably translates to about a 9.5, 10-inch casserole dish.
Yeah, so say enough for 10 people starter. And so one quart of cream, 6 whole eggs, 3 yolks, a little bit of salt and pepper. And
3 yolks meaning 3 yolks in the dish yolks. And no whites.
Right, right. Right. So what you do is you bring your cream up to a boil, and in a bowl you whisk the 6 whole eggs and the 3 yolks together just until they're incorporated salt and pepper, and then you off the heat, you whisk in the egg mixture into the cream, and you should do half in and then half back into the eggs. It's called a liaison.
Will it not scramble those eggs?
No, it won't. Not off the heat. You're off the heat.
So you let it cool down for a second?
Yes, you can let it cool down for a second. I can do it on the stove.
I believe that everyone cannot.
Okay, all right. Off the heat, a little bit cool down, add the eggs, and then pass that through a strainer. And then you can add the crab meat to it. Now, that is a crab flan. If you want to make crab spoon bread, you do the quart of cream, and I would do half a cup of cornmeal or polenta on the stove. And now you have to cook that. So you're going to cook it. You don't have to cook it all the way. You don't have to cook it until the polenta is tender. But you need to get it started. So I cook it about 10 minutes. So half a cup of, let's just say, cornmeal with 1 quart of cream and the salt and pepper to taste, and you stir it the whole time. You whisk it, just keep it going, and about in 10 minutes. And I would do it on medium heat.
So that quality of that dish is going to have everything to do with the quality of the eggs that you have.
Oh, I love
the fresh. If you get really good fresh cornmeal, mm-hmm. and if you're doing crab, getting
great crab meat.
Great yeah. crab meat.
So the hot cream and the cornmeal are done, then you again do the same thing. You whisk in the eggs off the heat, and that you do need to cool down because that will retain heat because now it has polenta in it. So let it cool down, not to cold, but let it cool down a little bit so it's not so hot, and whisk in the eggs, and that you can't pass through a strainer. You could have passed the flan mixture through a strainer if you were just going to add crab meat to the eggs. And to add the crab to the spoon bread, I would just put the crab in the bottom of the casserole dish and pour the custard over the top. And I would butter that dish first. So butter the dish first, no flour, but just butter the dish, lay the crab in the bottom, and then gently pour the custard over it. You have to bake that in a water bath, so you need another pan with the water that would come halfway up the side of that pan, either one of those dishes, whether it's the flan or the spoon bread, and bake it in the water bath at 275 degrees for about 30 minutes.
If you bake it without the water bath, then you're going to get kind of a scorched, dried out.
Yeah, it's going to be
odd,
awful
product.
So that's a good starter. And then for me, I would like to have rack of lamb. So, and I would like to grill it. And so I'm going to do rosemary marinade. Just
cutting it into chops, or
I'll roast the whole racks. Grill the whole racks. It will just be easier. I'll cut it
But you're looking at a pretty good time then for grilling a whole rack.
Yeah, probably, 18, 20 minutes grilling rosemary, oil, salt, and pepper. Doesn't need to be anything else. Just make sure you've seasoned it well, that you've oiled your grill down well, that you don't let it flame up while it's grilling. The fun part about that is if you have the ability to actually work over a wood fire, oh my gosh, that would be so good. I would love to do that for Easter. And then, and you don't even have to do a first course. I mean, you could have a soup, some sort of wonderful soup. I would probably make mushroom soup, make morel soup, morels, a little bit of onion, shallot, sauteed in butter.
You talked about the crab spoon bread as being a first course.
That's, yeah, but you could do that as a first course.
That's a pretty darn easy, boom, on your plate.
Well, exactly. So you could, or you could even make that an accompaniment to another dish. If you were serving ham, I think that would go okay. If you're serving pork, probably not. With a lamb, it might be a little strange. I would definitely have it first.
Crab and lamb might not be my choice.
No. And then the other thing with the lamb is, do you grill some vegetables for the lamb, or do you do a gratin, or do you have potato puree, mashed potatoes? I do like the idea of zucchini, something like that with the lamb, maybe even root vegetables, roasted parsnips, carrots, celeriac, cipollini onions or shallots or pearl onions, whichever your preference is. And I also like the idea of serving artichokes with it.
Yeah, sweet onions is always a very slow cooked sweet onions, and a little bit of vinegar and a little bit of sugar is a way that my grandmother mm-hmm. used to make them, and that was fantastic with lamb.
I just think it's so nice to just be able to, and you can roast the lamb in the oven and not make yourself go outside and do all this, running around. It's just so nice because it is a family holiday. You really want to be, done ahead and just make it easy for yourself so that you can be with the people.
Well, you can also grill it partially and then just finish it in your oven.
Yeah, that would be nice. You could smoke it the day ahead even if you wanted to, or pre-grill it the day ahead. Or you could grill it while you're, everybody's getting ready and you have a few minutes before church or whatever you're doing. And also, I think just a big salad is important on Easter. I don't know. I just always think of salad. A couple butter lettuces and tender lettuces and goat cheese, or you could do warm goat cheese toast, a little bit of sliced baguette, brush it with butter, toast it in the oven, and then, put a slice of goat cheese on and just heat that up and serve that with a beautiful, simple green salad with fresh herbs.
Is that about the salad or is that about the grilled cheese that you just made?
It's about both.
Anyway, we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine. We're going to get a little bit more into what to do today for Easter and spring holidays. And then in the latter part of the last segment, we'll spend some time on a chef's challenge. All of that and more on WIPR. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And so if you're just joining us, in the last segment we were talking about lamb rack. Cindy, let's talk about lamb legs before we get into the chef's challenge. Because that's the thing that I think so many people, it's great to have a rack of lamb. But leg of lamb is often what you think of,
sure.
Especially for a larger crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Two questions just about serving lamb in general. I know a lot of chefs like to serve it medium rare. Don't you like it cooked a little more than that? Not a lot more than that, but
yeah,
a little more than that?
I really do. I have to say I like it medium.
I do, too.
I want it really nice and pink center.
Well, it has good fat. I mean, you want to cook out a little bit of the fat to get the texture the way that you
mm-hmm.
want it.
Well, and also the leg has so many different muscles in it. And so the leg of lamb has many different textures that you're dealing with in this one big piece of meat. And it can be pretty challenging. If you cook it medium rare, there are going to be pieces that people are going to be like, really, I don't want to eat this. So
if you're cooking it generally medium, mm-hmm. you're going to have some of those muscles that, because of their texture, will be medium rare, and some will be medium well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
Because of the size of the piece of meat. And
also its inconsistency in size.
The different texture
of the
muscles.
It goes from tiny to wide to less wide. You know, it's a funny shape.
I know some people, well, they'll ask the butcher for a lamb leg boned out and tied.
Yeah, boned, rolled, and tied. Well, the nice thing about that is it's going to cook faster, and you're going to be, it's much easier for you to slice it than on the bone. But you don't get the bone, and you don't get the flavor of the bone. So for me, I would rather cook it on the bone, and it's better for you to just learn how to slice it. And then you can even make, like, great soup the next day with that bone, and then all of your scraps, or you can, you know, sort of slow cook the scraps and make sandwiches with them or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of use.
One of the things that I've seen both around the Mediterranean a lot, and also I saw in Argentina, people, this is not so easy to do at home, but God, it can be amazing. If you can string up lamb by the mm-hmm. hoof
mm-hmm.
and folks would literally put slashes in, insert little bits of garlic or half cloves of crushed garlic
mm-hmm.
and have that whole thing seasoned over a fire. The thickest part of the lamb is closest to that slow fire
yeah.
that they would slowly build. And the thinnest part of that leg would be further away. So you ended up with a little more even cooking temperature. That's not so bad.
No, that would be great, but
probably you're not going to dig
I don't
out.
See a lot of people doing
behind
that.
Your house in Charles Village.
What were you making fun of me for
string
earlier?
String this up for your cherry tree. I'm
come on.
Even worse
no one's going to do that,
worse,
Tony.
Worse than you
but
are.
It's a good story, and it's a beautiful thing. So, and you already said the most important part to me about that is the garlic, which is if you.
I just keep thinking about the wine that I want to drink with the lamb.
So
that's the problem.
What wine do you want to drink?
Oh gosh, rack is different for rack. It has more fat than the leg, but it has less flavor. So I want a little more tannin. I want red. And almost never want to drink older wines with Easter for some reason. It's like it's the new year. It's a new season. I want something young and kind of punchy. If it's a big, generous vintage of a Bordeaux, especially a Merlot-based Bordeaux, like a Saint-Emilion, Pomerol, if you have a nine, any nines around, good for you. Something with a little bottle age on it, but not, I mean, those are wines that can often live 30, 40 years. But something that still has some bloom to the fruit, that can be great. I was thinking if you're on a bit more of a budget for rack, I mean, maybe it's like a Rosso di Montalcino, mm-hmm. you know, not as famous as Brunello, but usually it's big, punchy Sangiovese fruit.
Mm-hmm.
That can work really, really well. If it's the leg or it's a shoulder, you know, which has more flavor, is a little bit tougher, and has less fat, but still some fat. You don't need, that's maybe something a tiny bit older and or varietals that are a little bit softer.
Okay.
You know, so maybe that's Malbec, maybe that's a Rioja from Spain or Ribera del Duero from Spain that can do marvelously well. Well, for me, a little bit, like what's on my brain for this year is Vino Nobile di Montepulciano. I've had, which is Sangiovese.
I love it when you say that.
Well, it's the most confusing wine in Italy. The name of the town, Montepulciano, is the name of a grape that's grown in another place. So the noble wine, Vino Nobile di Montepulciano, is Sangiovese. It's a particular kind of Sangiovese, Brunello Gentile. And there's a producer who's gotten better and better over the years, has a female winemaker now.
Nice.
Val di Piatta.
Good.
Val di Piatta is a marvelous producer. And those wines are very fairly priced. And you don't have to have the Reserva to have something gutsy, not too tannic, very good flavor for lamb leg. So, so cooking a lamb leg, a little bit different, right?
Yeah, just making sure that it gets good caramelization. So roasting it at
That means browning on the outside.
Thank you, Tony. 425 degrees for, say, the first 15 minutes of cooking. Now, you have rubbed salt and pepper into it, maybe a little bit of corn oil. I would make little slits and slide pieces of garlic in, like you were talking about, that the Argentines do over the fire. And you know, you don't want that garlic to burn. So you really, you just want to get it, you know, get a little slit big enough in there so you can get it in with the meat. Now, if that's bone in, if you have a bone rolled and tied from your butcher, if it's in jet netting, which is what they put, it's like putting it in a sock, but it, you know, it's kind of all wrapped up in a... Yeah, I can't describe it, but that can come off.
Sort of a lamb's fishnet stocking.
There you go, thank you. Okay, that can come off. Now, it may not be a lot of fun to take that off and stuff it back in, but if you're up for the task, because it's been boned, you can then take it out of the jet netting, open it up on the countertop, and season the interior of it really, really well.
It makes a huge difference.
So, yeah, you really want to do that, and then you have to just put it back together and
put
it back in the jet
netting. Put your garlic
right in there, too. Yeah. Now, yes, of course. And then, so I would do garlic, rosemary, salt, and pepper in that situation. Now, if it's been tied by the butcher where he used butcher's twine and actually made knots, I mean, and it doesn't look like fishnet stocking, don't undo that unless you know how to tie it back up. But so that's it. Just roast it at high temperature for 15 minutes and drop it down to a low temperature. I would drop it down to 300 or 290 and just gently let it roast. And it's going to take a long time and your interior temperature is up to you. But for sure, let that rest before you slice it. That is the other big aspect of it. So that's it.
Are you ready for a chef's challenge?
I'm ready for a chef's challenge, Tony.
WAPO.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Lamb sausage, your choice. Lamb shoulder, chickpeas, saffron, cardamom, Yukon gold potatoes, white asparagus and sweet hothouse peppers, whole almonds, yogurt, cara-cara oranges, eggs, milk, butter, sugar, vanilla bean, garlic and onions, 2 bottles of Vino Nobile di Montepulciano.
I knew that you would be excited about that.
Oh, you know I wanted to say that. Yeah. All right. Okay, so... I'm going to make an egg custard. Now that I already told you how to make one, I'm going to make another one. So
you told us, so you can move forward. An egg custard with
and
what?
This one's going to be with milk. So it's the milk, the eggs, the sugar, the vanilla bean, and I'm going to add some of the yogurt. Actually, ooh, that would be good. I'm going to add some yogurt to the custard.
So it has a little tang.
Yeah, and then so you have the custard, and then the cara-cara oranges. I'm going to supreme, and then any juice that I get out of it, I'll reduce it down and make a little syrup for the custard, and then... Actually, I'm going to do a quenelle of yogurt on top of the custard, and I'm going to garnish it with the cara-cara oranges. So that's dessert. We started with dessert.
People like to start like that.
There we go. So the white asparagus, I'm actually going to make a course with it with the whole almonds. And the white asparagus I'm going to cook in acidulated water, which is water, a little bit of lemon juice, salt, and pepper. Peel the asparagus first. Handle it delicately because white asparagus snaps in a heartbeat and will break. So you need to blanch it until it's just al dente and then shock it in ice water. And I'm actually going to do a cold course with that. I'm going to use a little bit of the yogurt again. I'm going to make a little vinaigrette with something I don't have, which is, I'll mix a little bit of the cardamom in the yogurt. I'm going to mix the cardamom in with the yogurt and just lace that down, the white asparagus, and then put the whole almonds on. So that's first course. And then the lamb shoulder is going to be a long, slow roast. So again, try and get some good caramelization. I'm actually going to put the pan on the stove first. I'm going to brown it all the way around.
So you're going to roll that shoulder around, brown it.
I am. And
That's definitely what I would do.
And then pop it in the oven and cook it on very low heat. So again, probably 275 for a long period of time until it's cooked to medium. And the chickpeas, I'm going to cook it with the garlic, onions, and saffron, and until they're tender, And that's actually, I'm going to make that a broth. I'm going to make that into a broth, and that will be what I serve the pieces, the wonderful tender pieces of lamb shoulder on. There you
that's
go.
That's
fun. That's it.
All right. Let's see what in the world you got for me. Okay. Lamb loins. Yeah, you gave me the cut that you like. I gave you the cut that I like. Carrot, Yukon Gold potato, dried fava beans, which have to be soaked.
I didn't
then.
Use my potatoes.
No, you didn't.
Or
I'm
my
sure
sausage.
That you will.
I forgot both of those.
Yeah, I thought you might.
I'm going to put the sausage in with the chickpeas,
I'm
going to add the potatoes to the chickpeas, too, because that would be really good.
Okay.
So sausage and potatoes in with those chickpeas with the saffron. All right, your turn.
Editorially, what I would have done is take the
care.
Sausage. I know they don't care. You know, like you do a ribboned ham?
Yes.
Yeah, I would have gone in with the sausage on the shoulder.
Oh, well, that's nice.
That might have been fun. All right. Lamb loin, carrot, Yukon Gold potato, dried fava beans, onion, shallot, garlic, arugula, artichoke, all herbs and spices, extra virgin olive oil, red wine, chicken stock, cauliflower, goat cheese, eggs. Lamb loin, obviously, is a main course. Those favas, you'd have to soak them. It's funny, I guess I could do a warm salad with favas and the Yukon Gold potatoes and some onion, shallot, garlic, really kind of cook down into a bit of a pudding with a little bit of the red wine. Mm-hmm. That would be pretty entertaining. Cauliflower, maybe poach that. Maybe the chicken stock, reduce that stuff down. The cauliflower, the carrots. I want to make a custard. I have no milk, though.
Yes, you do.
Okay, thanks for the milk. The cauliflower, the carrots with the goat cheese in it and the eggs, making a custard. It's like a veggie custard. The artichoke I want to serve as its own course. I'm kind of hoping that there's just a little spring artichokes that I can mm-hmm. almost shave. You slice them so thin.
Right.
And
that's
then
so
have those. The arugula is the thing I'm not going to use. It really, I mean, I could use it as just like a rough garnish for lamb loin, but lamb loin, that is something that because it's so fatty, I would sear that in the pan just to render some of the fat and then want to grill them relatively long time mm-hmm. and then slice those guys. It's funny. Those are one of the cuts that you don't slice thin on lamb. You can slice that kind of nice and fat. I would still take that, rest it up to like a medium or so. I don't have a sauce for the lamb loin. Really good olive oil and salt is all I want for the lamb. Lamb loin, that's a luxurious cut. Anyway, I think that's all we have time for. I like my stuff, but I want kind of a redo, and we don't have the time.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. If you want to listen to this or any other broadcast of our programs, you can go to the WYPR website, wypr.org, and look up the podcast from the Foreman Wolf page. If you wish to contact us, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
come follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
If you want to follow my redo, it's going to be on the Real Tony Foreman at Instagram. Thanks for listening.
Happy Sunday.